Hello. And after the busiest summer of my life so far, I am back. I'm recording from my new house. I now have a wife. I have a new job that's been super busy since I've gotten it at the beginning of last month. Wow, I've already had the job for almost 2 months. There's just been a lot going on. But I'm finally posting a new episode. And I'm recording another one next week, which means I should be posting another one next week. This episode is with Deepan Guharajan, who at the time was actually my employee. While I was still a residence director at Hardin-Simmons, he was one of my RAs, my resident assistants. And he was great. Born in Malaysia, had two brothers that came to Hardin-Simmons before him, and so he ended up coming as well. And he's a great guy to know, has a lot of insight, and is very smart. And him and I had a lot of interesting conversations when I worked with him, and that made it easy to kind of start doing what we were doing. So, we just decided to record a conversation. I hope that you enjoy it. I hope that those of you that have started listening recently enjoy more of my episodes as you continue to listen. And if anybody knows anyone out there that you think would be great on this show, let me know. I have a few people lined up. I have a few episodes that you haven't gotten to hear yet that'll be posted soon, but I have some people lined up soon, including Ross Whitaker from The Branch, who will be on next week, actually. So his episode should be posted within the next few weeks, depending on when I can record with people. And it should be good. I'm actually testing out a new recording studio with him next week through ACU's library. Since I'm a student there, I get to use their podcasting studio, and so I hope that works well. If I don't end up posting his episode soon, it might have meant that I didn't know how to use their studio, but we'll see. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you continue to follow me as I continue to work on my little side project for fun. Have fun!
Is that how I sound?
That's how you sound.
Oh, weird. I hope it's a good sound.
I know, I remember introducing y'all or whatever, and saying it. I was like, Guharajan! And I tried to roll the R.
You did great, though. No, really, honestly. I was surprised. I was expecting you to look at me and be confused.
You're just too nice. Oh, you didn't think I even knew what your last name was?
I thought you knew it, but it'll be hard to pronounce it, because some people make the H a silent H.
What's the mispronunciation you hear the most?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Guharajan. Instead of J-E-N, the way it's pronounced is J-A-N. Guharajan.
Guharajan. Mm-hmm. Instead of
Guharajan, just like bring it to a close.
Interesting. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
I'm recording, by the way.
Oh.
Is that too much? No, too much pressure for you? Did I catch you off guard?
I got my game face on now.
That's good. An early morning with Deepan Guharajan. See, that's what I did. I said Guharajan.
Couldn't even hear from me.
There's only one U.
Yes.
Guharajan.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I don't even know where to start, because I have a lot that we could get to, and we only have like an hour.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
This calls for a part two.
We haven't even recorded part one yet. Let's start with the low-hanging fruit. Oh, that's embarrassing. My phone went off.
It's okay. Grace is in everything. That's the way I look at it.
Oh, wow. We're getting deep. Quick. Grace is in everything. We'll get back to that. I'll even write that down. Grace is in everything.
It's a joke. It's a bad joke.
I'll ask you about the joke then. You grew up not here.
I did not.
That's the low-hanging fruit, the obvious thing that we could talk about. But a lot of people probably ask you how you got here.
Yes.
Actually, I was with Roseboom asked you that recently.
Yeah, it
was,
probably Castle, I think.
How did you get... No, it was when we had dinner at his house.
Oh.
How'd you get here?
Yeah.
And then, you said, my brothers came here. Well, great. How'd your brothers get here?
That's the easy answer. If the question further than that, then you have to go into the whole backstory.
Yeah, let's go into the backstory. You're from...
That's right. From Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, which is the capital of Malaysia. Lived in a suburb called Petaling Jaya. At one point, kind of moved around. Was homeschooled from the age of 9 upwards.
Okay.
That was me, so my brothers were
through college?
Up until college, yes.
Yeah, okay. Not through college, until college, yeah.
Yep. And we did that because the schooling system was taking... our parents didn't like the way the systems were being... just certain things about the system, just the amount of schoolwork, and they didn't have time for anybody. We didn't have time for anyone. So then, Sunil, my brother, had a guy with him at soccer practice, football practice, and my dad asked him, oh, where do you go to school? He said, oh, I'm homeschooled, uncle. So he said, oh, okay, cool. Then he talked to his family, and my dad heard what he had to say, and it sounded very interesting to him. And so we shifted on. And send it to you. My brothers were older, so he was, my oldest brother Roshan was in 14 years old, so he was in grade 8, grade 7. So for him, the change was huge.
Sure.
Sunil also, the change was huge, but for me, it was pretty straightforward.
Good, but because they had a lot of friends?
Yeah, I just, we were learning things in Malay, because
It
was government school, and then shifting everything to English was hard.
Do you speak English better than they do?
No. Same. I mean, we all grew up with English, but learning in Malay was, I think, that factor. And so, that a lot of our family told us not to do it. They said, you're going to destroy the children's education. They said, they're not going to get to college. Just like those old school uncles and aunties who said, it wouldn't work. But they did it. I'm happy they did, because it's worked out well for us. And so, the centers were based around small churches.
Uh-huh.
So, homeschooling students would go there. And Eli 360, Ted and Ellen Presley,
that's right,
came to our school, our homeschooling center. And they spoke about ACU and HSU and Oklahoma Christian. And we ended up, Roshan loved it, wanted to find out more, so we called them for dinner. They stayed in Malaysia for like 3 days, and then they're going to Thailand and Indonesia and everywhere. But I don't know what they had to say, and Roshan was the first one to come here.
And did he like it?
Loved it.
Really? Why?
I don't know.
Are there, what would the schooling options have been in
there
Malaysia?
There was a local college that accepted, it was called Help University, and it was geared for homeschoolers. So it's one of the few schools that accepted us. So we could have done that. We could have done the ADP program, which is an American degree program. So we could have done 2 years in Malaysia at like a private college, Taylor University, and come to Oklahoma Christian or something.
Yeah.
So there were options like that, but Eli was one of the few that offered us straight, and just because we didn't know anything how to apply. Before then, we were looking at Germany, because they had a free education system. We were looking at Australia, UK.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How does a free education system work?
You work off and pay the government, I believe, after you graduate.
So they, it's like paying taxes, but it's just to the government?
In a sense, yeah. Like, I think you're bonded to the government once you get out.
Mm.
So let's say I become a doctor, I have to work in the government setting for
5 years. Oh, I see.
They're kind of like just a partnership. And then you can either pay off and get done with it, or you can work off the 6 years and then you're free, kind of thing.
Interesting. What do most students do in Malaysia?
Most of them do it, either will go to a help university because the parents, and some of them just would prefer to be in Malaysia. And they just did the homeschooling syllabus to escape the government system.
Yeah.
Some would go to UK. A lot of them did like an Australian syllabus, and then they would end up going to Australia. The syllabus for homeschooling we did was a American one, Alpha Omega. It was a Christian homeschooling syllabus.
How was homeschooling? Do you feel like you got a lot out of it? I mean, you're pretty intelligent.
Hopefully.
No, you are.
That's good. I think it worked for us. I think it, and the aspect of the being in a school still, but just doing a different syllabus, that really helped, because we still got to have fellowship with children, because it probably would have killed us if we'd just been the three of us for the rest of our high school
life. Killed you socially.
Yes.
You have zero social skills.
And so that's why I think when I came here, the idea of living in a residence hall for has always been interesting to me because I don't think I've had that kind of community before.
Sure. Interesting. I just wonder, I mean, you grew up speaking English for, I guess, when did you start speaking it?
English was at home, so from birth, really.
But did you all kind of go back and forth, or did your parents mostly speak English?
Parents spoke English. As you look, like, parents, my dad's, like, grandparents' side, they would speak some Tamil, which is, like, a dialect of Tamil in India. But my mom's side, they would speak Malay. But English was the...
Is one of your parents Indian?
Both my parents. My mom is Sri Lankan.
Oh.
And my dad is Tamilian from India. Several generations down, though. But
sure.
They were both born and raised in Malaysia.
Interesting. I'm so ignorant of difference.
I don't know.
I mean, like, I just don't know. I have no idea what the other options are.
Yeah.
And I don't ask people.
I mean, I don't think I myself fully am... sat down and introspecting what it all means to me, you know?
From somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're here.
Mm-hmm.
So how often do you think about, like,
home and
I didn't go to high school here.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird.
How much I think I've missed out just because of my own culture.
Yeah.
Because of the homeschooling. And just because we are here for college.
Can you tell what, like, the main differences are between cultures of Malaysia and North America?
I don't know.
The U.S. specifically?
Again, probably it's... misrepresentation since I've only been to Texas and it's only been 3 years.
You've only been to Texas?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't even been out of the state, like, even for
driven
a couple days?
Once to Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay.
To visit relatives there. But otherwise, and Disneyland, so California.
Nice. Okay.
The usual.
Disneyland isn't,
yeah.
Doesn't count as a city or anything.
I don't know. I would say, and again, most of the people I met, all the values I hold, I would say, close to heart are similar. Good, like, family is important, education is important, and but then again, I'm also meeting all the guys who've come to school, so.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say too much difference. And there's some minute things you would say, oh, probably that wouldn't happen back home. Like, marriage is not something that occurs at after college back home.
When does it happen?
Usually...
Like 18?
Like late. Oh, no.
Oh.
Like late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I'm
married. That seems... I think Texas is more that younger age, mm-hmm. though.
So you go further out?
I think. Because what I hear... What I seem to hear more is that other parts of the state, like a state, the nation,
mm-hmm.
are 25 and up.
That would make sense.
I don't know. There's some reason. Maybe it's just Abilene, but Texas seems to be the college... drive
kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
For you better be married within your first year of graduation or not.
It's impressive.
And I've just missed it. Too bad. Didn't make it within the first year. It'll be like 2 months after that. Or just a month after my first year.
Yeah.
But
breaking the norms.
Why is that? Why do people get married later?
It's probably a very old Asian kind of stereotype.
Yeah.
But if you can't provide in the sense that there's this if I went home and told my grandparents I'm getting married,
mm-hmm.
as soon as I graduate, there would be arguments, there would be fights, there would be things of that sort. And it's because I don't know, it's more of like that you have to be established before you can take responsibility for someone, and vice versa for the girl,
mm-hmm.
to take responsibility of the man. It was just like a very traditional sense of once you're established, then you start looking for things.
Sure.
And so once I've had a job for 4 years, I have a car and an apartment.
And that counts as being established.
Mm-hmm. They call it, in the church, there's like the 5 C's, and so he has to be a Christian, he has to have a credit card, he has to have a car, he has to have a condominium. I don't know what the fifth one is. Country club.
Oh, okay.
And so you got all those 5 things, then you can marry him or her.
Interesting. Is that like a widely held view?
It's just like a...
Or is that a joke?
It's a joke.
Okay.
But some of the old Chinese and Indian aunties and uncles, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually think like that. In some form.
Yeah. Oh, my pen broke. Oh, no, it didn't. Do you agree with that? I mean, you're dating Hannah, and so mm-hmm. I know you're not, like, getting ready to get married, but have you... I mean, you must have thought about it a little bit.
Yeah.
A timeline.
I would still say I'm, like, if she said, oh, we should probably get married after college. I'll say maybe we shouldn't, in mm-hmm. the sense that, and also just put things in perspective, I have no standing here as a citizen or as a, I could pretty much leave, they could ask me to leave at any point,
yeah.
and I would have to. And so it's a more of a battle of what would fit the vast scheme of things. Mm-hmm. Am I going to stay on here? Am I going to go back? Are we going to go somewhere else completely?
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. But definitely, yeah, it won't be after college thing. It'll probably be after a master's or after a PhD kind of thing.
Sure. Do you have a preference right now as to where you want to live?
Part of me would like to go home.
Yeah.
I would like to go home and see. And again, for the majors we have, and she's speech pathology, I'm psychology, I think there's a lot of potential because back home it's not as developed or as progressive as here.
Oh, really?
So it'd be really good to go back and push those programs.
More opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And to be almost a pioneer in those fields, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And to do good there.
That'd be pretty cool. Okay. Do you think Canada would be open to that?
So far, we talked, I mean...
Assuming that y'all stay together for years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not trying to scare either of y'all.
No, you're... I think it's a cool thing to think about and to just see how things develop.
But, yeah.
And again, if we end up in, I don't know, Houston for the rest of our lives, I don't think there's anything wrong there.
Sure.
But if we end up in...
Well, Houston.
No.
Sorry, guys.
Or if we end up in... Malaysia.
Yeah.
You know, let's see how it goes.
Because that's something I've had to really think about recently, is moving out of your comfort bubble.
Mm.
That's been terrifying to me until recently. I mean, it still kind of is, but
sure.
At some point you have to realize I can't stay where I want to, where I'm the most comfortable forever, mm-hmm. unless I'm okay settling for a long time.
Definitely.
And so at least at some point Bailey and I might need to move out of state even for a few years. Uh-huh. And we've talked about it, but you know, when you talk about it you're just like, yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll move to Colorado. Yeah, that's great. But now it's like I actually might need to move somewhere.
Yeah.
And it might not be my first choice. I might have to move out of a comfort zone in order to get more experience to be able to decide where I for real want to live,
huh.
whether that's Dallas or
sure.
Oklahoma or Kentucky, like not Kentucky,
but she's traveled around though, hasn't she? Because
she's lived in four different places because she was born in Oklahoma, moved to Maryland, moved to Puerto Rico,
whew.
Moved to Houston, moved to Abilene. So actually five places.
Impressive.
So that's not as big of a deal for her.
Welcome back for you.
But I grew up in the same mile radius for 18 years.
Oof.
And then moved to Abilene, which is not a big move. I mean, it's 3 hours
mm-hmm.
for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I've lived in two places
for pretty consistent
for my
times.
Whole life, but mm-hmm. with that whole time I've been able to go to Dallas if I needed to. So yeah, moving somewhere else would be pretty big for me. Moving anywhere like any further away would be pretty big, even if it was like Lubbock.
Yeah,
that's not an easy drive to Dallas. So I don't know, just kind of having to come to terms with that is big. But you have to fly
20
hours.
Well, closer to 23.
Okay, golly, it's
pretty tough sometimes.
Yeah, and most of the things you and I talk about are faith aspect.
True.
And you have started to go through whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
a realization maybe, or a questioning. Maybe it's less of a realization and more of a confusion
mm-hmm.
or crisis, if you want to call it. The thing that I focus on now in my life was junior year of college, I started asking questions. And I hadn't asked questions before then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where you are. And so it's,
yeah.
I see a lot of you in me in that sense. But, yeah, we've talked about it a lot recently, it seems like, since you've been working for me, at least since August.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come up, and then we'll spend 30 minutes talking about something,
definitely.
Which I think is great, and that's healthy. But where do you feel like you are now, and where is this coming from?
I think it began with the Greece trip in May,
mm-hmm.
when I visited, it was part of an honors program, travel experience credit. And I went with Dr. Tom Copeland and to a group of 20 of us. And he did a pretty impressive job of just asking questions, of instigating thought. Because it's one thing to have a professor in the classroom asking questions, but it's mm-hmm. another thing over dinner or just in a social setting for
sure.
him to bring up these points. And so that's a very cool aspect. And it started there. He would ask, that Greece was 99.7% Greek Orthodox, I
mm-hmm.
think that was the religion, and it was very similar to Catholicism with a number of differences. But things like that, things that I just regarded as, oh, that's what they believe, this is what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the lines were very much blurred. Like when you see someone whom you respect, or who you've come to respect, and he's burning incense to a saint,
mm-hmm.
things like that you would never consider worship.
Mm-hmm.
But then you hear and think about those. I think it was that aspect of how do I get in touch with God and how do other people get in touch with God?
Yeah.
And it used to be very clear cut. And I think through this whole process, it's become very blurred.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to redefine those lines, I guess.
Sure. So that started a new phase of
yes.
your life, a new chapter. And what's led to, I guess, where are you now and what's led to it? To where you are now, from that moment, from that point?
I would say attempting to read up, attempting to talk to like people like you, people like
mm-hmm.
People who are knowledgeable in the sense that they themselves have experienced some sort of change in their
yeah.
in their faith outlook. And I wouldn't say I've come that far, quite frankly.
Sure.
I would say I'm pretty much in the same boat, but I think I've... Instead of just wallowing in like this indecision, I'm attempting to figure out what and how and why.
Yeah.
And it probably will leave me still in the same boat. But when I was telling my oldest brother Roshan about this, he said, and I would tell him, I've asked all these people questions and none of them have given me satisfying answers. And he said to me, and he's coming from his belief, that
yeah.
he said, this to me is God telling, come and ask me the questions. Instead of going and asking all these pastors. I mean, it's good that you ask your pastor. It's good that you ask your best friend. But he
mm-hmm.
said, this is all these answers that aren't satisfying you. He said, go back to God and he will give you those answers. And so I thought that was really neat. I had not thought about that or contemplated that. And
so how do you do that?
I don't know.
Prayer?
Prayer. Read the word.
Contemplation.
Eat your vegetables.
Eat your vegetables. do you mean doing the things you should do? Like praying and...
I guess the and it sounds rude, but I guess the trite, the things you hear in every Sunday school class, which is to get close to God, you must do these things. Which also makes sense, because we're going to...
Do your quiet time.
Quiet time, scripture reading,
mm-hmm.
fasting and praying, things like that nature. And I would say I haven't pursued those to great length, which is probably... another story altogether.
Well, so. Yeah, neither have I.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Witten on a recent one of these. I said, scripture scares me. So, and I do the unhealthy thing and just avoid it. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm still... Just because I told him that doesn't mean I've had a change of heart. Like,
mm-hmm.
I still am avoiding scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I'm scared to read it or pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared to attempt to understand it.
Yeah.
And not even just because it's a powerful book, but just because it's so huge. Like, it's so talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's revolutionary for so many people. And I feel
yeah.
like I've heard it abused so many times.
Agreed.
That I think I just get scared.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go, you know, I'm not even going to pretend to understand. I've heard so many times now that it's a translation of a translation of a translation.
Mm-hmm. Or you hear people saying at churches, oh, we don't teach so-and-so's version. This is just the Bible. And you're like, well, I'm pretty sure that's your interpretation, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and even if you get rid of the whole oral tradition stuff, because people talk about, like, well, it wasn't written down immediately. It was passed down orally for this many years.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, whatever. That's fine. Even if it was written down
the moment that these things happened, it wasn't written down in English. Mm-hmm. You know that for sure.
Yes.
And I don't know how many times it was translated.
Over and over.
So, what have we lost in that point? And then how much weight are you putting on the Bible?
Yeah.
So, I definitely don't like the literalist view because I just don't trust it.
I had a friend, I grew up reading the Good News version of the scripture. Mm-hmm. That was how our church was described. And a friend of mine told me, dude, that version is written by one man. It's so flawed. So many people have disowned it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. What version do you read? He said, oh, I just read like the King James version. Mm-hmm. I was like, cool. I said, well, if you really want an accurate version, you should probably learn ancient Greek and Arabic. to me, it doesn't make sense. You're going to get mishaps in any one of the interpretations or translations.
Yeah. And that's not to say there's no value in the book at all. Mm-hmm. That's probably why I'm scared of it, is because I know there's value, mm-hmm. and I don't want to misinterpret it. Whether or not you believe it's just symbolic value or it's like really, really meaningful value, mm-hmm. either way, that's still kind of... I'll talk about it, sure, but I'm not going to pretend to be able to give a sermon about it, like to write a message, and that's terrifying to me. Tough but, time. Yeah. And I think that idea is what led me to the same chapter of life that you're in. And I think I've had to come to terms with the fact that I don't know if I'll ever be certain of anything again.
Mm-hmm.
But I've started to even just say, maybe uncertainty is exactly mm-hmm. what I'm looking for. I don't know. But I still ask questions, like you said you do.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know the how, when, where, why
mm-hmm.
of this. But there's not always going to be a satisfying answer.
Definitely.
At least in my view. Even if you do pray and contemplate and mm-hmm. journal and whatever.
Yeah.
Those answers that might come to your head, are you really certain of those? Mm-hmm. Or?
And would they really give you peace? I feel the bedrock for me has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And that nothing is going to... I don't think nothing's going to replace... I think something could potentially replace it, but nothing's ever going to leave me as secure, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because half of it was because I was in a pretty entrenched Methodist, traditional Christian bubble and things like that.
What was the major bedrock shift?
Just this, like, the idea that maybe how certain we are of people's destinies when mm-hmm. I see so much goodness and innocence in people. I think that was the one that got me, because I'd always heard, like, oh, people can look at nature and they'll know that's God. And mm-hmm. if they don't believe it, your fault, ma'am or mister. And it used to make so much sense, but now when I look at it, I'm horrified that we teach those things. And mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't be, because, I mean, every religion has their own, has those, will teach something similar to that. But now it scares me.
Mm-hmm.
That I was grown up, and almost in a sense, most definitely indoctrinated to believe all these things. And it's taken me 19, 20 years to come out of it and say, is this what I really want to believe for the rest of my life?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and it's scary because we think, oh, all these poor Muslim men and women who are growing up in these Arab nations, they're being indoctrinated. Well, we're doing that pretty much in every church, every religious institution.
Yeah.
And so.
And not even just religious institutions. I mean, you're socialized no matter where you go.
Definitely.
I think that's the thing that blew my mind the most in a Jeremy Rhodes Entry to Sociology class.
He's a good professor.
He's a great professor. Is realizing, coming to grips with the fact that you, I'm using that phrase a lot, coming to grips, that you didn't have a say in the way you were brought up. So mm-hmm. how do you respond to that now? Because everything that happens to you changes who you are.
Definitely.
And you're going to have, even if you're like me, where you've questioned everything so much, and you've tried to break things down to the absolute core,
mm-hmm.
I could probably take a step and say, you know what, agnostic's the right word, but just like, I'm so uncertain of things that I'm going to take this stance. But I don't. I still want to identify as a Christian.
Mm.
Even You go ahead.
I would say that's the same thing. For me, when I struggle with things, I still have that urge before a major test, be like, dear God, help me with this test.
Sure.
And is that really doing anything, or is that just satisfying that peace in my mind of, you've prayed to this entity for so many years,
mm-hmm.
and now that you're starting to question things, it scares me.
Yeah.
I would ask questions about the God I believed in for the last...
Sure.
For my whole life. And so, but continue.
Yeah, no, I just... Even though I could, I see value in asking questions, and I see value in maybe not being so literal or
mm-hmm.
or constricting. If somebody came up to me and they're like, what do you absolutely believe, though?
Yeah.
It would, no matter how like nebulous and nonspecific
gray.
My mm-hmm. language is and gray, I would still identify ultimately as a Christian.
Sure.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just interesting to me that even though I've gone through this huge phase of, like, trying to pinpoint who I am
mm-hmm.
and questioning the way I grew up and seeing some negative stuff
yeah.
in my assumptions, it doesn't, ultimately it doesn't change me.
Definitely.
It does change me, but ultimately mm-hmm. it doesn't change that bedrock. Maybe the bedrock shifted, but it's still the same rock.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say, I mean, Witten would say, that's what you should do. Like, you... identify and embrace your tradition
mm-hmm.
because if you just throw it out, you know, then you have nothing
left.
And I don't want to misquote John, but I feel like we've talked about that a lot. Even if you question all these things, it's okay to go back to the way that you know the world or that you've looked at the world for
mm-hmm.
so long. And there's still a lot of, obviously, Christianity I still see as a beautiful thing because ultimately the message is love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I know I can stick to. That's
mm-hmm.
like the thing I can't question.
Yeah.
And not can't, but don't, is just love has proven to me that it's better
mm-hmm.
than the other way. So, and when I see that as a Christian message, that means I'm identifying as a Christian ultimately.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, would you kind of say the same thing? Or?
I would say, yeah. I mean, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, what do you believe in? I'd say, oh, I believe in...
I hope that doesn't happen.
Hopefully not. Happen. But I would most definitely say, oh, Christian,
mm-hmm.
God came to save us. And all the core truths of being a Christian, whatever denomination that may be.
Yeah.
But if you honestly ask me as a friend, like this, what you believe in, I would honestly say, I can't tell you right now.
Sure.
At that point.
I think the big change for me too has been just accepting other people's views
mm-hmm.
and what I believe is actually loving them, which is not telling them what to believe,
mm.
but listening to something that somebody else is saying. And I think you mentioned that earlier. Certainty in other people's destiny.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know that. I don't want to be that person that's telling them what they should believe.
Sure.
Because I don't see that as loving. And some people do.
Mm-hmm.
And they act that
sure.
as if it is. And
doesn't
that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't agree. But I think that's the big thing that happened. Even though I identify with the same tradition, I'm more open to the Jim and Casper view, which is have an atheist friend
mm-hmm.
and don't try to convert him. Just be friends.
Yeah.
Or... having friends that are Muslim or
mm-hmm.
whatever, I'm okay with that now, and I wasn't before.
Cool.
Yeah. So, like, Hannah, you know, since she's an atheist, I'm totally fine just
chilling with her.
Just chilling with with that non-God-believing jerk.
Heathen.
Heathen, pagan.
Okay.
Just kidding, Hannah. Gotcha.
She probably will listen to this.
You don't think so?
I don't know.
She doesn't like me very much, so.
That's not true.
I feel like we could go so much further into that, too. What did you mean earlier when you said graces and everything?
Oh!
What was the joke?
Because did you say one of your bosses says that when you make a mistake, grace is in.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Caleb believes in that.
Mm-hmm. And so...
So you were just referring to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were making some grand statement
no.
of Whatever.
Probably should have spun that into some deep,
no.
deep thought.
How do you feel now about the conversation we've had a lot recently about natural disasters and stuff? Suffering's the big question.
Yeah. I feel like it, when you've told me the same answer, like, I feel like I've asked you the same question multiple times.
Yeah, no. Suffering's an interesting thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm. And you have given me that answer, and I feel like the first 2-3 times I heard it, completely disregarded it.
Sure.
But the last time you explained it, it made more sense. And I wouldn't say it made complete sense to me.
Sure. It doesn't make complete sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
What answer are you talking about?
The answer that if Fortunato comes through here and God comes and intervenes there, he will have to intervene at, where would he stop? That point of, does he just then rescue all suffering? And to me, in my head, it still would make, and I know we would disagree at this point, that mm-hmm. you would say, you see good things because there's bad things.
Yeah.
Which is definitely true, but I don't know if I want to believe it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and it's mm-hmm. just because I say, to quote the great band Switchfoot, the shadow proves the sunshine. Ooh. Deep in, the shadow proves the sunshine. But for real, I mean, if you get into the physics of things, darkness doesn't exist without light.
Sure.
And the other way around. You can't have something without its contrast, mm-hmm. or without its even...
dichotomy.
Yeah. There's no definition for light if dark doesn't exist. Because then everything's light, so you don't refer to light. It's mm-hmm. just, it's there. So, to me, good doesn't exist without the opposite, or the absence of good, whatever you want to call mm-hmm. that. Evil or just...
Mm-hmm. And that's what St. Augustine's approach was, right? He was one of the first few theologians to say, oh, evil is the absence of God.
Sure.
So God is still perfect and pure.
I'm getting a phone call in a second.
Go for it.
Hello. Do you not remember the code? You left your phone in your wallet? Can I just text you the code? Okay. I'll do that. Okay, bye. Jared got locked out.
Oh, no.
That's okay. What was I talking about? Dichotomy?
Dichotomy, yep.
So, the suffering thing, even though you don't want to be okay with suffering,
mm-hmm.
even though I don't want to be okay with suffering, I still want to explain. Like, I want to be able to explain it,
mm-hmm.
because I think it is that kind of subconscious fear, too.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't explain suffering, then I just have to be okay with it.
Yeah.
With no explanation. And that seems to be the biggest point of issue that people that look inward or outward toward Christianity and yeah. say, I don't like what those people preach,
mm-hmm.
is because of suffering. As they say, I don't... That's what I've heard the most on podcasts, especially with Pete really? Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is a lot of his guests are atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them come back to the point, because I see so much evil in the evil. World. And so, for me, instead of saying I see so much evil... that there's no God, kind of to me, there's no evil without a God.
Mm.
There can't be, it's not evil if there's no good, and to me, good comes from some kind of standard.
Contrast, yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a really short way of putting it, but...
No, but yeah.
Good old suffering.
Good old suffering, be good.
But yeah, and we've talked about this too, also, I haven't suffered.
I would say the same. I don't think I've ever gone through a crisis in my life where I've been like, you know, I honestly couldn't say I've suffered in my life. But I think that to me makes it all the more real.
Mm-hmm.
That I've been so blessed and fortunate.
Sure.
But there's somebody probably 10 minutes drive from me who will never, and you could say the fortune that I had. Or you could just look at it, oh, that was her life, this is your life. Kind
yeah.
of thing. And I've heard a lot of people say that. That how can you, what if the person working in, as a custodial services group, how is he not enjoying his life?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, to me, again, from my perspective, it just seems so unfair, life, at times.
Because it is.
Yeah.
There is no fairness. And then the question just gets to be, where am I okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
How much do I have to do to feel better about the fact that no matter what I do, I'm going to be better off than other people?
Yeah.
And there's going to be people better off than me.
Definitely.
And but some of them might not do anything.
Interestingly enough, when I think about, I don't think of myself as unfortunate.
Sure. Because you're not. I mean, mm-hmm. ultimately, if you get down to it, I had lunch with somebody yesterday. We were talking about this. A lot of people around us complain about money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we specifically talked about teachers, because he has friends that are teachers that he's talking about. But you still get a paycheck, and you're going to have food, you're going to have water, you're going to have enough money to buy clothes, and this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that at some point I'm going to complain about how little I make at some point in my life. But
mm-hmm.
where do you stop? Like, where do you become okay with how much you make? Because you are mm-hmm. making more than other people.
Definitely.
And it's really easy to complain about how unfortunate you might be,
mm-hmm.
even if you are getting a paycheck every month or every
Definitely.
2 weeks or whatever. And there's people making a lot more than you or I will
mm-hmm.
that complain about stuff.
Sure.
But do they have the right to complain about those things?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we just look at them as the evil person that makes more money than the homeless guy down the street that
yeah.
doesn't have any food? And then do you ask the question, the really brutal, unfair question at times too, I don't always take this view,
mm-hmm.
what did that homeless man do to get to where he is?
Mm-hmm.
And do we feel bad for somebody that made bad decisions? If they did. I'm not
mm-hmm.
saying every homeless person has made bad decisions that lead them to them not
yeah.
having a home. But did they do something, and do we, you know, give them credit
mm-hmm.
for, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to exactly say.
I would say I always fall on the side of, this is probably because of Dr. Rhodes, of the institution
mm-hmm.
at work. I don't think I've ever, I know, yeah, I'm probably this guy, I'm going to meet somebody contrary to that, but I've always, my experience with misfortune and with hunger and with poverty has always been of an institutional standpoint. Like, there have been very few individuals who I've met who have been, oh, I squandered my money on drugs and alcohol and women or so-and-so, and that's why I'm homeless.
Sure.
It's always been, to me,
a government thing?
And not in a government sense, but
are you anti-government? Do you think?
So,
let's get to the bottom of all this.
I would say I'm pro-government.
No, I know, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I would say that I feel like it's the government's, and again, I don't want to get shot after this interview, but
I don't think you will.
Get mugged in the third floor Nick's staircase. Where's the government now?
That's right.
But I would always say, I think it's the institution's place to help those who are in need.
Sure.
And irrespective of how they got there, and I mean, if somebody is continually blowing off money, I think that's another issue. But all my experience with helping those in need have always been from a standpoint of, they were born into it, or they were led astray into it, they were outside factors and events, or lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like some people honestly don't think that's the way it works. And to me, I think that's a very, very harsh outlook. The fact that, oh, I've squandered my money in gambling, and that's how he became poor, or how that's
mm-hmm.
how she became poor. Things like that. I don't think it's as neat as some people make it out to be.
Oh, no, definitely not. And who knows what, who knows how lucky some people have gotten
mm-hmm.
that might, you know, society might say deserve not having a home.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would never say that about anybody, but, well, yeah, never mind. Okay, that's a whole different thing. But, should Hitler have been homeless? That's the.
Oh, God.
No, but, maybe people have gotten lucky and haven't been caught or haven't.
Sure.
Whatever, Breaking Bad. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that. He goes so long without getting caught, and he's making a lot of money. Does he deserve to be homeless? And then people
mm-hmm.
that have been really good people.
But because of one addiction? Because of
Or not even. Maybe they didn't make any bad decisions, and they just
end up on the street.
Got evicted and didn't make enough money.
And
so do you look at the, I mean, do you do what I do most of the time and just drive by when they have a sign?
Oof, yeah.
Or do you roll your window down and say, where can I take you?
No, I probably should. I don't.
Should you? But then other people, you know, say, should you? You don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. You don't know if they're really homeless.
For me, the point of, I like, and again, the past social work, let's say it like that, past social experience, social work experience I've done has always been with an organization. Mm-hmm. And so I always find comfort in, but then again, it must be for the hundreds of people who come to that free meal, free health checkup, free nutrition appointment. There's just as many who are dying for that opportunity.
Yeah.
Probably literally. And so, I don't know. From my point, my parents have always told me this, if it's your money to give, you can do whatever you want, if that makes sense. And so, and up until a year ago, probably, I've never had my own money. And anyway, my parents are supporting me through school. The paycheck I get here goes to just keeping me afloat. And so I don't think I'm at that point where I can say, yeah, I can give you, which is probably selfish, but I can give you a meal, I can give you a ride, I can give you a drink, well, things like that.
Sure. So,
For me, effort and time have always been better, in my head, better
than just handing a dollar bill to somebody.
And so, and sometimes they probably needed the other, probably needed money. Probably.
Sure. And that's what I've seen my brother, Chris, who's 30. He doesn't like to give cash out because he kind of takes the stance of who knows what they're gonna just do with that cash.
Sure.
I don't trust them with just the money, even if they tell me they just want food.
Sure.
You know, let's go to the nearest fast food joint. I'll buy you something right now. Mm-hmm. And he says a lot of people take him up on that, mm-hmm. and then some don't. They're like, oh, no, man, I'm good. It's like, okay. Mm-hmm. And he just keeps walking either way. And so I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris is a lot, he's really good at kind of sticking to his guns, and he doesn't get caught up in all these questions that you and I are asking each other,
mm-hmm.
and worry about the minutiae of things. But he has his view and he sticks to that. And so I think that's a good way to approach it.
Definitely.
But sometimes I'm just totally thoughtless and I see somebody and I like, you drive by in your car and you either turn the radio up or you roll the window up or you pretend to like look in your back seat.
Definitely.
Or you whatever. And I don't think that's right either. I'm mm-hmm. totally ignoring somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I should at least acknowledge the fact that they're there, you know?
True.
But that's a whole different thing. And you could ask the question, too, does a good life exist if bad lives don't? And if everybody was fortunate, would anybody be fortunate?
True. I would still say, like, I would like to live a robotic existence. Part of me fantasizes about that, yeah.
Really?
If, like, the whole world was just completely plain and empty,
mm-hmm.
but there was no such thing as... But then I guess they wouldn't be a good... I don't know.
Well, plain. Plain's the right word. I would love it. Because nothing's good, but nothing's good bad.
That was plain, you know?
So would everything just be transactional?
Like, yeah, I guess.
Thank you for this interview. Here's some candy.
Yeah. Just, you all just lived off the land. No sickness or death. Because I would be a good sheep farmer. Is that a ranch?
But sheep exist only to be eaten.
No, they all like it's like that verse in Proverbs where like cheetahs and sheep are like housemates, and
isn't it lions and sheep?
Probably.
And then the cheetah and sheep ran track together. Well, that then here's the question that'll lead into the bigger question of this adventure.
Mm-hmm.
What would the purpose of that life be? If we lived the robotic plain life, what would the purpose be?
Purpose would be, I don't know. Could good community be it? Could you have fellowship with people?
But it'd be so plain.
Yeah.
I mean, the community would just be like, I sheared this wool today. I have clothes for those of you that need them.
Thanks. I don't need clothes. I'm good. Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. Everybody already has clothes.
Everybody has clothes.
Everything's plain, no good or bad.
Now I'll quote Genesis 1, oh, probably chapter 2.
Okay.
So yeah, definitely chapter 2. How did Adam and Eve...
Not Adam and Steve.
Not Adam and Steve. It would be great. Just two buddies in a garden.
Yeah.
But he was probably a good buddy. Yeah.
Can women be good buddies?
I have a really good joke about Adam and Eve. Can I throw that in here now?
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Just a 1 minute side note. So there are two children.
Okay.
In a Sunday school lesson.
Okay.
And the teacher was telling them about Adam and Eve. And so Susie was trying to keep Johnny to stay awake in class.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give them good Anglo-American names.
Sure.
And so the teacher asked the question, who created the world? And so Susie poked Johnny with a thumb, what do you call it? I don't know.
A thumbtack?
A thumbtack. And so he gets up and says, oh, God. And so the teacher says, good job, Johnny. And then...
Oh, like he exclaimed,
oh, God. He exclaimed, oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
And then... He said, then the teacher asked again, who was sent to rescue mankind from sin? And so Susie poked John again, and he said, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And so the teacher said, good job. And then the teacher asked.
That wasn't even the punchline.
The last question, oh yeah, there's one more. Then the teacher asked the question, what did Eve say to Adam after having their 25th child? And so Susie pokes John again, and then John says, if you poke me with a thing one more time, I'm going to cut it off.
Oh, no. Deep in.
No, was that too bad? Was that?
No.
Just okay.
That's okay. Kind of funny.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. But talking about the thumbtack.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Right. I understand. Did the teacher say that he was right, or did he kick her out for being inappropriate?
That's as far as the joke got to me.
Kick him out. Oh, okay.
That's as far as I learned it. It's probably a whole completely sideswipe with that.
Clever joke.
Thanks.
Well, then let's wrap up with what's... Would your answer of purpose or community for that hypothetical world where mm-hmm. nothing is bad and nothing is good
mm-hmm.
be the same for this one? How do you see... And you're in transition, like I am.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see purpose in the world? And do you see... a collective purpose.
Again, when I look at this world, it's hard for me to find purpose in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think sometimes I'm just blown away at how insignificant things are and how big we make them out to be. Like in a job as simple as being an RA in a school for
mm-hmm.
400 people that live on campus,
mm-hmm.
there's so much drama.
Sure.
That happens when there's probably. Same amount of drama occurring for an organization that holds 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And so just how small we are at times. And so when I think of that, it's hard for me to find purpose at times.
Because it's hard for you to see what your effect is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a sense, yeah. I mean, you can say, oh, I had fellowship with this guy in the cafe. Or I spent an hour with this guy counseling him through the loss of his pet.
Mm-hmm.
Or things like that. But in the big scheme of things, it's hard to feel important.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you have to feel important, but it's just hard to feel like that sometimes.
Sure.
And so I don't know what that answer would be for purpose. I would say, I would just say there has to be something better than this at times.
Sure.
Than this kind of purpose. And I could be potentially wrong. And so that's why... I still sometimes think about, like, what would they be if there was no suffering and no death and just bliss.
Mm-hmm. And, what wakes you up in the morning? Why do you go to class so that you can ultimately have a job, so that you can ultimately work?
Yeah, I would say.
I mean, what drives you? Because that's kind of what I've started to see as purpose as well. Is
definitely.
These things that you're doing every day mean that you're... assuming something.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you... Yeah.
And it's okay if you don't have an answer. I
honestly, yeah.
I like to hear
this. I would say pursuit for knowledge as something that has driven me
pretty
far. And it's something I'd always thought of school as just a means to an end. But now I can honestly say I have enjoyed school. I have, and I'll probably continue to enjoy the education experience for the rest of my life.
Sure.
And it's something I try to push on others. I like, it always surprises me when people in class will say, like, oh, what's your favorite book? And it'll be, oh, I don't read. And it's nothing, I will always look as books as the traditional route for knowledge.
Sure.
Because I'm sure there are documentaries and podcasts and all sorts of things that you can learn from. I'll say pursuit for knowledge is probably a good thing. And it's probably, that ties in with the fact that I'm questioning so many things.
Sure.
That I wanted to learn and experience. But I don't think there's an overarching theme of purpose in my life yet.
Yeah.
And now for the life, now for this season of my life, is just to continue what I'm doing, I would say. And just school and fellowship and community and relationships and family. And just to be good at those things. Just trying to be good at those things. Achieve good things there.
So good, ultimately, still, I mean, kind of wise. Yeah,
whatever that may mean.
Sure. That's such a big word
that
could mean different things to different people, but, I mean, I understand. I'm not trying to say that your purpose statement doesn't have value, because it does. And I think there's a lot of value to saying, I have no idea. I really think that that's, again, certainty is, I'll probably end up saying this so much in this project that I do, but certainty seems to only be damaging to me. And I've written about this, but I have that Dimitri Martin quote still in my head. The more I can't even think of it. It's the idea of the more somebody knows about something, the stupider I think they are. Or the more certain somebody seems to be, that's just what proves how dumb I think they are. And so I try not to pretend to know things. Even though when we talk about stuff, I have, like, sometimes concrete answers.
It's like the story of Socrates, and when he went and visited the oracle in Delphi, and he asked her, who's the wisest of them all? And she said, you. And he found it so hard to believe, and so he said, no, there has to be somebody smarter than me, more knowledgeable than me. And he went all over his side of the world, I would say. And so Greece and Europe and all these places, and he questioned all these famous men and women, and he said what separated him from all of them was that they were certain in what they believed in. And so the oracle was saying, because you are not certain in what you believe in, you are the wisest of them all. And I think that's pretty cool. That ties in exactly what you're saying, that certainty in almost always in my experience has been something I've shied away from. And especially with philosophy and religion and all those gray subjects.
Is there an animal in the ceiling?
Probably.
Did you hear that?
Probably a ghoul. Just me.
So does that make us the wisest of them all, then?
If we're
subscribing to uncertainty?
What?
Pretty effing wise, huh? Well, then, I think we've reached the goal, then. I can give up now. I can quit pretending to look for questions and answers.
Nice.
I do, though, whether or not, I don't think I'm right. I think the point of uncertainty is saying I don't know if I'm right. So even if somebody tells me, well, you're really, you know, you've got it because you're not sure of things.
As enticing as that sounds, yeah.
It's like, great, I'm glad that you think so.
Yeah.
But that doesn't change the fact that I don't know anything. If you tell somebody, good job for being ignorant, they're going to go, thanks, I'm still ignorant. Okay.
I don't, and not that you are ignorant, but
yeah.
Even if you look for answers to questions and you don't find anything, you still don't have those answers. And
I don't know. I just don't. That makes me wonder sometimes. I'm looking for answers, but I want to be uncertain. So what happens if I find answers?
I think we can safely assume, at least from my perspective, Then we won't find those answers.
Which ones?
Like, pretty much every question we've got on this topic.
What if a prophet from Allah comes?
Oh, man.
And we have this
whole time. Call into this show. Get
him on a podcast. And he comes and says, yeah, you think your Christianity view is right, but yeah. I'm from the Muslim God, and he's real. And here's answers to all your questions.
Oh, I would say, bro, you got it, man.
That's what you'd just be like, all right, I'm in.
Sign me up.
Would you really?
No.
Oh, okay. Not that there's anything wrong with being Muslim, but I don't know, even if there was a way to prove that this guy like came out of the clouds, be like, I'm terrified of you, actually. I don't want to believe anything that you say to me.
I'm reading this super cool book about Gautama, Buddha,
uh-huh.
and his maiden name, I guess, before he assumed the role of Buddha. And
Before he got married?
Just before the divine inspiration. Before he got married, yeah. Oh, he changed his name. And became Smith. Buddha Smith. But it compares the teachings of Jesus and Buddha. And so it compares the similarities between the accounts and, like, the virgin birth, and he also had a virgin birth, and the teachings on the mount, and he also had a teaching very similar to the mount.
Mm-hmm.
There's one story, and the author could find no parallel to Christianity, and it's when Jesus is born, it's very lowly, in a manger, with mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. With
animals and straw.
Yeah. But he was a son of a famous king, or monarch. So he was born in a palace, but apparently, according to the account, he gets up, he's born, takes 7 steps to the north,
mm-hmm.
and proclaims with his hands on his hips, your king has arrived, or something like that.
Wow.
And so that's what account. And so I'm just thinking of this guy who comes down from the heavens.
He's like, I'm here!
If he comes out and takes 7 steps as a child and shouts to the northern hemisphere, I'm here!
Then you'll believe him.
Let's hear what you have to say.
I'd at least like to hear what you have to say.
At least like to have a Subway meal with you. Just to hear what you have to say.
Why Subway? I don't know. You'd eat Subway with this guy?
I would have a Subway.
That's what you meal. Want first?
Because it's not messy enough that I'm, like, in case he needs to hand me his business card. But it's filling enough that for $6 I can get a good meal.
So what you're saying is, The prophet of truth that will come from the clouds
yes.
is going to have a business card for you.
I would hope so.
And if you don't, if your hands are too messy to take it, you're screwed.
I would experience heaven with him. So
what if it's not? What if he's preaching hell? What if he doesn't preach heaven?
Wouldn't there be heaven though? I've always thought that of all. Now he could preach hell. Yeah. Then I don't want his business card.
Okay.
Keep it.
One more question.
Shoot.
We're going to end on this question. You have time, right?
Yeah, I know, but I know you need to run for a drum lesson.
I'll be there soon. She'll be fine. Are there aliens?
Are there aliens?
Yeah.
I think there's life. I mean, you can talk to any scientist, chemist or biologist or physicist, and they will almost assure you that because of the statistical, just because of the nature of how big this universe is, it's mm-hmm. almost a statistical
certainty
that there is some form of carbon-based life. And again, I don't get into that realm. My brother would kill me because he'll say you're not trained in that realm because he's a biologist and physicist, and so he'll probably...
Does he think there's alien life?
I don't know. I should ask him. But he would know far more of the specifics behind what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave it to him. But I don't know. I would say there is. I don't know if there's like you and I, like there's a podcast occurring somewhere else on this earth. But, not on this earth, in this universe.
In this universe?
But I think I wouldn't. It doesn't scare me.
It wouldn't shock you.
Yeah. I think, yeah, lots of people are scared by the fact that there might be life outside of
it. But that's because we're assuming that they're going to come kill us.
Yes.
If they're there.
And from...
Instead of aliens being like, hey, more people! Bigger, can we hang out?
Bigger New Year's Eve parties with Ryan Seacrest. That's where are you from? Oh, I'm from the Nibula region.
We've been watching your TV for years. We've been trying to figure out where you are. We love Ryan Seacrest. And please introduce us to Conan O'Brien.
Oh, my gosh.
But also, I think if there are aliens out there, I really doubt they're recording conversations with each other like we are. They probably don't find value in this, in the same thing that I do. Man. Hey, let's talk with a microphone between us. And then, when I'm done talking to you, I'm going to save the file and make everybody listen to it.
I think
it's going to be great.
I wouldn't be surprised, but there's some pretty trippy things out there.
Like recording conversations.
Aliens recording conversations. Mm. But I know, like, it scares some religious people.
Oh,
we aren't the only ones. Because I think the church has perpetuated this notion from day one that we have always been the center of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God came to us.
The center revolves around us.
Mm-hmm. The heliocentric theory of how much the church just picked apart Greek and Roman philosophers and just attached everything that... plagiarized everything that fit with their scheme.
Yeah.
So, and I think that thought still carries on today, with the fact that we are still at the beginning, we are still at the center.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and if you'd asked me this probably before I'd gone to Greece, I'd been like, whoa, no way, no aliens.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you ask me that, it doesn't perturb me.
You had an alien encounter in Greece?
Did I? But which?
Oh, okay.
Came to my hotel room and played Jenga with me.
That'd be a fun alien experience. Pete Holmes had somebody on recently that said, not recently, I just listened to it recently,
mm-hmm.
that said, if aliens do come and take people, how are we so sure that we'll even remember those experiences?
Oh, are they like Men in Black? They have like a thing that makes you forget?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And that made me go, dang. We might have no idea what's happening to us every day. We might get taken. Sleep is not sleep. You are gone. You're taken to a different planet.
And you're probed or whatever.
Oh my gosh. I don't want to be probed, man.
And you're poked with that stick that Susie was poking Johnny with. That little thumb pin.
The stick of truth.
All right.
Stick of truth it is. That's as good of an ending point as any.
Thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you, Deepa.
Thank you for inviting me.
I really appreciate it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how well did I do? Like,
let's look at these notes. You answered my purpose question.
Sweet.
But you didn't have like a real answer.
Ugh.
So that takes some points off. You had a good backstory.
Nice. Okay, that's always good.
It's gonna add some points. There were good and bad jokes throughout.
The subway was a bad one,
so that's
it?
A check minus subway.
The subway joke is a bad one.
Oh, the subway joke was great. Oh,
okay.
The poking joke was
weird.
Poking's
bad. Let's end
no,
that
it's
one
not
up.
Inappropriate. I mean,
sure?
I guess some people would think it is, but
yeah.
It's just corny. It's just a bad joke. It's just cheesy.
Yeah.
We talked about homeless people. That's a big check.
Social work, man.
And then dichotomy. And you answered my alien question. I'd give you an 8.
An 8? Wow.
Yeah. Out of like 35. Just kidding. 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10?
Yeah.
Honestly, that makes me happy.
Not a gold, but, you
not
know,
a gold, but
most likely a silver.
It's a bronze, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a bronze.
I'll give you
honorable mention. How about that? You don't make the blocks, but you make honorable mention.
I like it.
You're the one standing behind them waving that nobody can see. Oh, thanks for your time.
Thanks for the award.
But for real, I appreciate it.
Oh, no, thank you.
And it should be good.
Sweet.